Greetings, urban farmers, gardeners, and healthy food visionaries. Farmer Craig here, and welcome to the 828th episode of the Urban Farm Podcast, where every day we work together to educate and inspire you to become part of your food revolution. Today in our podcast, we have someone who hosts international agriculture students and farmers. We're talking with returning guest Scott Murray about the MESA program. Scott has 50 years of organic agriculture production experience in the United States and Mexico. He has served in a wide variety of roles within conservation, food production, and environmental leadership, including as an elected California conservation official for the last 31 years. Scott also specializes in farmland preservation projects utilizing smart growth principles. These days, his primary work is on farm creation and consulting, including his work on a farm growing coffee in Southern California, which had its first harvest and sold out in one day at an incredible $796 a pound. Wow, isn't that interesting? Welcome to the show today, Scott. Are you ready to rock?
Yes.
One of these days, we got to get you on the podcast talking about this whole coffee thing, because we've teased people's interest, and so we may bring you back to talk about coffee. But today we're talking about the MESA program. Tell us about it and how it got started.
Well, the MESA program is a program approved by the U.S. State Department, a special kind of educational training visa called a J-1 visa. And a little over 25 years ago, the founder and executive director, Lauren Augusta, had been working with another J-1 program and decided that focusing on including the world's interest in agriculture and our future, and bringing people that are educated in agriculture, academics and farmers, that are interested in a global food system that is sustainable and works for all. So over that time now, the MESA program has hosted over 1,000 interns.
Wow.
That have come from 21 different countries. And that has been an amazing opportunity, because most of these interns come for what we call our first level or basic program. And they become what we call agricultural stewards. They take a 10-week sustainable global food systems training certificate course in their own country, and that's hosted over Zoom and done in person. It prepares them for the experience and a little bit of the culture shock of coming from one country to the United States. But the real key is we get to work with these brilliant minds. So my personal journey as a host started about 18 years ago, and I had found out about the MESA program and was engaging in supporting the work. And then it was like, are you ready to become a host? And we had two stewards that were here, one from France and one from Kenya. And they were at a placement where the farmer suffered a pretty serious accident and had to basically go into 6 months of recovery. And in that case, one of the things we do is we'll move our stewards to another more suitable location. And I got to be that location.
And you were the lucky recipient.
It was an amazing experience. It opened my eyes so much. The gentleman from France, his name is Michael, and he came under a French government program for developing the farming industry in France by allowing students to go out and gain experience in other areas. The second gentleman, Titus, Mr. Menenge, was from Kenya and was a small farmer in a village, and his village had incredible food insecurity.
And that's not surprising.
It's not surprising at all, because many times when the big global food system moves into an area, They take up a lot of small farmers' properties and displace them. And then they don't necessarily hire the small farmers to work on the big farm. And so these people are displaced. And so we got very interested in supporting just the strengthening of agriculture all around the world. When you think about it, there's nothing more important. We need water every day as humans. I think they say we can go 3 days without water, but you can go up to 7 days without food in a nominal situation. Your body will definitely be stressed, but you can recover quite successfully. And so when we think about food insecurity, we have that's one problem. Then we think about global climate change and the degradation of soils around the world. And it's a practice that we really shouldn't be indulging in. We should be improving the soil, we should be improving the environment, and we should be drawing down more carbon dioxide. So the opportunity to host these two interns for a part of their 7 month year, it ended up we hosted them for 3 months, just transformed my experience dramatically as a small farmer. And what I realized is I could tap into the brilliance of people all around the globe to improve the transformation of American agriculture. And what I mean by that is we're in another era of these changes in American agriculture. In the 1800s, almost 80% of our population was involved in food production. And now we're down to 2.7 to 3.2%, depending upon which statistic we look at. Actually, the 3.2% is very hopeful because we had gotten down to 2%. We're working our way back. And one of the big changes in agriculture for everybody is the cost of labor. So some big ag operations that get so big require a tremendous amount of labor. I rode the train this last week to teach up in Los Angeles at Cal State Northridge, and I passed several strawberry fields on the train adjacent to the train tracks. And one of them that looked to be 40 to 50 acres, it looked like there were 200 people picking strawberries. It was just so massive. And it was one of these little patches of agriculture left in a zone of development, and they're all endangered. So what MESA has enabled me to do is to tap in to different amazing agriculturalists from around the world. And we require for the program some simple things of the stewards, that they have at least 2 years of experience in agriculture or an academic study of agriculture. That's a baseline. And just an example, at one point we hosted two interns from Peru. One was from the Altiplano, where they cultivate at up to 1,200 meters, 12,000 feet. They have the city where he lived, and it has farmland all surrounding it. And it just boggles your mind. But his partner, who also came from Peru, was from the Brazilian Amazon side of Peru, where his family grew cacao. So just in these two people, one pretty much down at sea level in the Brazilian, in the Peruvian Amazon, right up to the edge of Brazil, and another from farming at 12,000 feet.
One of the things that I noticed, I went to Croatia in 2014, you probably remember,
Oh,
and
yes.
we went on a food systems education trip where we were going to Zagreb, Croatia, to educate the communities about how to grow food sustainably and regeneratively. And the thing that blew me away most was we were there to learn from them. We don't have a, all right, I'm going to say we have little clue on how to farm regeneratively. Whereas what I found in Croatia was everybody grows food. There's a garden in every front yard. In fact, we were driving back from town one day, and the guy I was staying with says, "Hey, my friends are butchering a pig today. You want to go help?" And I was like, yeah, let's do it. And it was just this house next to the road. So I found that there's a lot to learn from.
Other countries.
Yes.
Well, and I remember very well about your trip to Croatia because you went in and out through the capital of Zagreb, but then you went out into the countryside, to a what I would call a regional capital. I don't remember its exact status, but a bigger community. And what you told me on coming back was that basically you could see this whole region from where you were staying, and that was your food shed. A very high percentage of the food was coming from just a few kilometers away. And certain things obviously were imported from a different place, but largely the folks in that part of Europe had to learn to live upon their own resources if they were going to eat during, especially the post-World War II era, where there were command economies and people were told what to do, but they were allowed to have a little bit around their homes and take care of themselves.
So that's the value that our friends from other countries bring.
Well, imagine I had an amazing intern from Peru. Peru's one of the places where I had a chance to actually host 12 different interns because I was doing that agricultural school project, and I had a home where I could have four at a time. And one of the ones that came from Peru was helping me with pest control. Oh, we've got this insect that's eating our lettuce, comes out of the soil at night. And I was telling him, oh, I've got to get up before sunrise and spray BT on these things. When they're active is the time to get them. And he said, but that sounds like a lot of work. Would you take a suggestion? And I said, oh, I'm all ears. And he goes, I see around your house, you guys save things for recycling, and that there's a lot of cans in your recycling bin, like from tomato sauce and soup cans, that kind of cans. And he said, what we're going to do is we're going to collect those. We'll take the lid is remaining on. We'll take that off. And then we're going to dig out little holes and bury them so they're right at the soil surface. And then we come out and we pour about half an inch of beer into each one before the sun goes down. And he said, the bugs will come out of the soil. They're going to smell that beer and they're going to crawl across the surface of the soil and fall into the cans and drown in the beer. And I'm thinking, what's attracting them from the beer? And he said, we think that it's the yeast, remainder yeast smell in beer, that they catch a signal of food that is a very high value food. So they go towards it. So the next morning, we both go out there first thing in the morning, and we had put out 25 cans. And every can had at least 25, as many as 50 worms in it, dead.
Caterpillars.
Yeah. Caterpillars is actually more accurate. They hide in the soil. They have a great strategy. The birds can't find them because they only feed at night. But they came out. And so we used one, I think it was two cans of beer, so maybe a buck a piece. And then recycled cans. And we had a much more effective system that worked while we were sleeping. And it was just brilliant. So we had, you mentioned food systems. One of our amazing interns from Ecuador was a civic activist that, and he organized the homeless population living in the capital of Quito to take over part of a park and create a farm that both taught the homeless population how to grow food, but created a food source for the homeless population. Right? And so A to Z. And I'm most excited because the scale of my farming operation has changed over the years. We have a very small home farm of 1.2 acres. We have hosted interns right here. I've been on the board of directors for over 20 years. And one of the projects that I'm doing is a coffee conversion where I'm taking a 29-acre avocado farm for a client, and we're going from a monoculture to a polyculture, and the main element of the polyculture is going to be coffee trees. And the coffee trees grow really happily in between the rows of avocado trees. The coffee you mentioned in the intro, avocados are an interesting tree that you can stump back to the to about 3 feet high, and they'll regrow a whole tree on the old root system. And we had 47-year-old trees. Oftentimes we think of their productive lifetime of only 50 years. They hadn't been stumped in about 10 years, so they'd grown to 40 to 50 feet, and they were producing little tiny fruit because of the weakness of this old tree. So what I did is I stumped all those trees back to the 3 to 4 foot height. We regrew them to new, smaller trees, which we kept small, and by pruning annually, and planted the coffee in between. And everybody said, there's no, you can't grow coffee in Southern California. Number one, it's outside the coffee region. Okay, that made me want to try it for sure, because when people say no, it's really just a challenge to farmers. So we planted 2,300 coffee trees of 11 varieties in a scientific layout with five zones. And in each of those zones, we had a test garden that had all 11 varieties in one patch. And then we did larger sections of the varieties across this farm. And we've been learning how to grow coffee here. And it really loves to have what we call companionship, not necessarily an overstory, like we read shade-grown coffee. Well, at the equator, in the zone of coffee to 15 degrees on either side of the equator, the sun is pretty much directly overhead. And so they grow trees that could be 60 to 90 feet tall and prune them up so they just have a top. And it gives dappled shade, which makes the coffee happier. But we found here in California, we tried growing the coffee in the full shade, and that made a big green plant, but no fruit. But between where it was protected by other plantings, it thrives. So now that was 2015. Now I'm 9 years later in this process. I've learned a lot more, but the Mesa program contacted me and said, we have an unusual steward that would like to come. He only has 4 months. Typically, they make a 7 month or 12 month commitment, 7 months being to those parts of the country where we have a real winter, and farming shuts down. Here in Southern California, we often host a 3 month extension for people from another climate to come to where we farm year round. But now I've really gotten into this coffee. I've started research plantings. We have one very successful at Whittier College in LA. And within sight of downtown LA, we're producing superior quality organic coffee. And
Nice.
the first year, which is the third year in the ground of production, because it's a scientific study, they're picking every individual plant and cataloging the amount and everything. And the varieties there, we have 14, but there's a cupping score in coffee, which is 100, and above 80 is considered ultra premium. And our coffee there at the experimental orchard in its first harvest cupped at 87,
Is that
which
all?
is that's good. Well, that's pretty good.
I know, that's
So
outrageous. Wow. So, and your steward from Mesa is helping with this.
this young man, or 32 years old, he's studying on scholarship for a degree in bioeconomy, which I think is fascinating. He's getting his second master's degree. And for the last 7 years, he's been an extension agent in Sri Lanka, where he comes from. Turns out that Sri Lanka didn't start out growing tea. Sri Lanka started out growing coffee
Oh, interesting.
and had a whole coffee export business going, but then a disease shut them down.
So bio what is his degrees in?
Bioeconomy.
Bioeconomy. I've not heard of that before.
I
And how is he
know.
contributing to MESA?
That was why I had to ask the question. So why 4 months? He goes, oh, this is a semester away. So he's two semesters from the completion of his master's degree in Germany, and they give them a chance. You could go away for one semester and do field work. So he has this 4 month window between his semester and next semester that he'll come to the States. And one of the reasons I'm really interested in him is that he's been the principal agent in Sri Lanka for the government to reestablish coffee production in Sri Lanka, because
Wow.
tea has become an overproduced commodity. So when you have an item that becomes an international commodity, it suppresses the prices that people get oftentimes. So they decided, we've had advances in disease resistance in coffee. Let's start to bring coffee back to Sri Lanka. So he's been doing that for 7 years. He's an expert, and he also knows all the green tea growers in Sri Lanka, because those are the people he's working with that are taking out their 50 to 100-year-old tea trees because they're at the end of their economic lifetime, and they're putting coffee back in.
Interesting.
And
So he's going to be working with you at Mesa.
through the MESA program, I have made a proposal to him. What we do, one of the things that the host does is prepares a training plan. What can you teach me at this farm? Basically, I've had people come to our small vegetable farm at the school, 25 acres, who were interested in doing vegetable production in their home countries on a small scale. So we really had great production and refinement there. But before, I never had coffee to really host someone based on coffee. Well, now I've developed all this coffee production. And the typical thing that happens is we demand a scientific proof of things. Oh, climate change, show me the science. Oh, mitigating climate change with plants, show me the science, right? So I'm really excited to host. His name is Aranda, and he'll be available for 4 months. And as a host, what we do is we have several things. The program is at the initial level, what we call the steward level, is funded by the host farmer. And the host farmer pays a monthly fee of $1,250, of which $800 goes to the steward as a stipend, and the other $450 covers things like legal visa sponsorship, which is a real big deal, comprehensive health insurance, the monthly stipend we have to deduct 14% for federal taxes from, then 24/7 coordination and support. These are people from a completely different part of the world that are suddenly in the middle of the United States. We offer an ongoing training program for them via Zoom classes, and we encourage the host farmer to teach everything that they know, that the foundation of their farm, to these stewards.
And this program is a California-only program.
Not at all. We have host stewards from the Hawaiian Islands to Alaska to Maine, Michigan, Wisconsin. This wonderful Corn Institute in Wisconsin has hosted our people all over the South. We have a major host right now in Florida, others in Arkansas, California, Oregon, Washington. Not so much right at this moment in the great Midwest, where the crops are basically corn and soybeans. That's the commodity crops. But it's very interesting. So the host basically supports the program with their monthly fees, but what the steward agrees to is 40 hours of a work week of what we call varied training activities, but these are hands-on training. So it could be seeding in a greenhouse, planting in the field, cultivating the field and harvesting, and even marketing the crops, for example. And the different stewards come are asked to highlight in their application and steward profile their interests. We had a young steward who was very interested in dairy, but we didn't have a dairyman in our host community. Mm-hmm. So he was also interested in CSA, community supported agriculture.
No, not.
He got to work about a mile from the dairy, and we got to have him interact with the dairy because we used their compost, but he primarily grew vegetables. But we got him time just to hang out and understand American dairy making. So we accommodated yeah. that. But the key thing is that they come to work, but they come to work in a learning mode. Mm-hmm. And so it's not just go over there and do that and do the same task for 7 months. It is a training visa. That's the J-1 visa is a training visa. We have to be responsible to the State Department for things, for example, like the training plan. Here's what this person is going to be presented with. And uh-huh. and that's pretty simple. Like I've been outlining the training plan for Aranda, and he'll get to work on this new 29-acre coffee planting we're doing. He'll get to work in my coffee nursery where I'm growing seed. He'll
oh,
get
nice.
To work in my coffee greenhouse where I'm then growing the plants up to size to be
yep.
transplanted out. Plus, I'll take him to the research planting that I continue to support at Whittier College up in LA. So he'll see that, and that'll be very good for him because he's in the university track right now. So why not connect him? And
yeah.
myself, as an individual host, I've always been involved in education for additional off-farm income. And right now I teach a project up at Cal State Northridge, one of our California state universities. And I'll also interact, he'll get to interact with a program I do at San Diego, at University of California, San Diego, and other schools. Yes.
Nice. So let's just boil it down. If you're a host, you're paying basically for a full-time person.
Mm-hmm.
Are you hosting where they stay as well?
Yes.
And then you're feeding them as well.
Right. So the challenge for the host, and it's been my challenge, is how do we provide housing?
Mm-hmm.
In some places, hosts have provided glamping tents, a nice setup where they have the access to facilities and their own private space. We've hosted a couple of our interns in mobile homes and trailers.
Yep.
For example, I was reluctant because the 29 acres doesn't have housing on it. But then I realized, wait a minute, we could rent for this 4 months. We're going to rent a mobile camper, right?
Oh, nice.
That allows the intern to live in the camper. He'll have his own space, his own kitchen for cooking. So the host provides housing, and it's flexible across a spectrum. Sometimes
yeah.
it's a room in the house. Sometimes it's a apartment in the barn.
Yeah. So Mesa is basically the coordinating agent between farms and stewards. If you're interested in being a farm host, or if you're a steward out there and would like to come and learn and teach us, where do they find out about that?
The website for the program, it's called the Mesa Program. .org is the website. And on that, there's a whole host of options. They can see, for example, one of the most exciting things is what have our 1,000 stewards gone home and done? We raise money to give what we call SPRIG, to help them spring forth when they go home. Very
uh-huh.
small grants, but one of our SPRIG grantees who went back to Cusco
mm-hmm.
in Peru use that $250 to build a greenhouse and train the local farmers there up at 7,000 feet in the mountains to use
nice.
these climate protection structures to increase their food production.
Nice.
Others have gone back and started nonprofit organizations and partner with Mesa as a host organization in those countries. So it's a benefit that's amazing. So that's illustrated on our website in our monthly newsletter. On the main page, you can go to what it takes to be a host. and see. And then there's a small host application that you fill out. But basically, what the host provides is the 40 hours a week, and we average that over the period of time. For example, some farms have a really big pulse of activity for planting and a really big pulse of activity for harvest and a little less. So they might work a couple of 50-hour weeks or 60-hour weeks, and then we trade them out by having a little less time. So the host
Perfect.
farmer provides free lodging and food or a food allowance, ample cultural and social activities. And this is really one of the keys of it, is we show them what's going on in the United States and share with them the neat things. And then they also are doing this educational opportunity both on the farm, and then if there's a local workshop or a conference or a webinar, we encourage the stewards to do that. And one of the things I want to say to people is the possibility of doing this, it's now very easy, but the benefit to the host farmer is incredible. The opportunity I've had of hosting these different folks and expanding on their teaching, I hosted four at a time on the school project I did, and we got them involved in the school. Like they did a presentation. Four Peruvians did this amazing presentation to the students of the whole school
Oh,
about their
nice.
country and food items from their country that the students got to taste. So it's this wonderful wraparound. This year, for example, we have the Baker Creek Seed Company is going to be doing their heirloom seed festival again. So that'll be happening while Aranda is here, and that'll be part of his host activities to go visit that and get exposed to a much bigger part of the world of what's going on in the United States. So
Nice.
I just want to encourage people that this is something very different that will bring positive and amazing change to your farm and inform you about how the activities of the kind of farming you're doing are being done in other countries, which is insanely valuable. Like how valuable it was when you came back from Croatia, your eyes had just been expanded and your mind expanded. And I remember a conversation where you said, "I don't think I'm going to go." And I was like, "No. You don't understand. This is the
A
opportunity of a lifetime
lifetime, and
because
it
you were
was.
paid to go as a professor and you got to have the whole experience." And what I want to encourage is people to realize, wow, this is an amazing opportunity. And by looking at the MESA program website, they can see a lot of these activities. And then the stewards post their profiles, and
Oh,
you can go,
nice.
oh, here's two or three people that are very interested in the activities that I'm doing. And then they study their profile and they say, hey, can we host this person? Right. And then we connect them up with a Zoom call. I had the most amazing Zoom call with Aranda from Germany. And then he sent me, because it was over Zoom, he used an AI program that created a whole transcript of our call. That
Oh,
is mind-boggling.
nice.
And he sent it to me like 5 minutes after we hung up the Zoom. It was like, whoa, mind expanded. So this is an opportunity for people to expand the vision and scope of their farm, to get an international cultural experience, and to have an amazing time tapping into what's going on in a different part of the world. And so I invite people, check it out, and it'll make a huge difference in your farm and in your family's world because you'll get to experience and enjoy the gifts that these people bring. And thank you,
Nice.
Greg, for hosting me to another episode of your podcast.
Oh, you bet, you bet. Well, and I was just looking it up. You've been on episode number 11, number 352, number 493, number 689, and 692. So we've covered a lot of ground with you, Scott. Awesome. Awesome,
Yeah.
awesome. Thank you so much for coming back on the show today, Scott, and talking about the MESA program.
Yep. So
All
have a
right.
great day. Thank you for this interview.
Absolutely. And listeners can get a hold of the MESA program at mesaprogram.org. And you can find show notes from today's podcast at urbanfarm.org/MESA program.
We hope you enjoyed today's episode of the Urban Farm Podcast. Remember to listen for tips, advice, and resources to help you on your journey with urban farming. You can find us on the web at urbanfarm.org or send us an email to podcast@urbanfarm.org. In the words of Vincent Van Gogh, great things are done by a series of small things brought together. Be encouraged that with each lesson learned and skill developed, you are one step closer in the direction of your dreams.